The effort to impose congressional term limits is a very big lift. It would require two-thirds support from both the House and Senate, as well as ratification by three-fourths of the states. Nevertheless, a group of freshman lawmakers are making a case for term limits. We're exploring what that means here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Last week, a reporter put the question to House Speaker Paul Ryan at his weekly briefing.
I've always supported term limits, so I mean, I've supported term limits since the day I got here, so I'm for term limits.
Cut and dry response there from the outgoing House Speaker. Melanie Zanona is joining us as we kick off this discussion on term limits. She's a congressional reporter for The Hill. Recently wrote a piece called Younger Lawmakers Ignite New Push for Term Limits. Melanie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So you're writing about freshman lawmakers here who have revived the push for congressional term limits. Why do you think this issue in particular is something that these new lawmakers are flocking to?
Well, look, I think it's a couple things going on here. Number one, this is a group of freshman lawmakers. They're all younger, under the age of 50. And they say this is something that they think will really resonate with a younger generation of voters. They say millennials themselves have lots of jobs. They don't understand the idea of staying in a job for 30 years. And this is a way that they think can attract more people to vote, to come out and vote. And it's important to note that these are bipartisan lawmakers. This is not just Republicans or Democrats. This is a group that is from both parties. They got together right in freshman orientation and said, look, we need to do something. Let's get together. It's taken about a year to really push hard for this and get a meeting with the president. But we've seen those efforts come to fruition over the last month or so.
Give us a sense of how large a group this is. You mentioned it is also bipartisan.
It's about half a dozen lawmakers. There's two Democrats, the rest are Republicans. They just introduced a bill, though, so they're working to pick up some more co-sponsors. They're pitching this to colleagues. So there could be other people that additionally sign on to the effort. But so far, the leaders of this, it's Brian Fitzpatrick of Pennsylvania, Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin, Jody Arrington of Texas, Vicente Gonzalez of Texas, Ro Khanna of California. He's a Democrat. And we also saw Greg Gianforte from Montana, who just signed on as well.
So lawmakers calling for term limits isn't really anything new. Can you speak to the history of this issue on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, so like you said, this is hardly new. We've heard this most recently, I would say, in 2010, the Tea Party wave. We saw a lot of these Republican Tea Party-backed candidates come to Congress, pledging themselves to say, even if there aren't term limits, I'm going to impose them on myself. And they've vowed to leave after a certain amount of time. But before that, we really saw it in 1994. It was the so-called revolution. A class of Republicans were elected to Congress, and they really made term limits part of their platform. It obviously didn't go very far, but now we are seeing this new resurgence, which is also really made possible by the president himself, too, who has called for this on the campaign trail. It was really part of his drain the swamp pledge, you know, making sure that these Washington creatures don't stick around for a long time, in his words, making sure that there's a lot of turnover. So it is nothing new. We've seen this for years and years. It just hasn't really gone very far on Capitol Hill before.
So term limits have always been a pretty hard sell, though, because you're asking people doing a job to put a cap on how long they can do that job for. How might this new proposal make it an easier sell for those already serving in Congress?
Well, you're exactly right. That's one of the biggest reasons why it's so hard to get something like this over the finish line. You're asking people to basically pass a bill that would hurt themselves. So what this legislation would do that this group has introduced, it would grandfather it in. So it would not apply to any sitting lawmakers of Congress, with the exception of the freshman class. So this group is saying we're willing to impose term limits on ourselves and everyone after us that comes to Congress, but it won't affect some of these veteran lawmakers that have been operating under the system, that have been here for a long time. And they think this is a real way that they can actually pick some steam up for this bill. It can actually get some supporters if they're not imposing the term limits on some of these lawmakers that have been here for years and years.
Melanie Zanona is with us. She is a congressional reporter for The Hill, recently wrote a piece called Younger Lawmakers Ignite New Push for Term Limits. We're talking about term limits on this hour. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Is this something you'd like to see implemented, or is there value in having longer serving members of Congress? What about term limits on the state or even the city level? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Melanie, certainly some lawmakers on Capitol Hill have come out against term limits. What are those in that camp saying?
Well, their argument is this. They say term limits really, get rid of all the institutional knowledge on Capitol Hill. Mm. And that in turn really empowers the lobbyists and the staffers who have been around, who you have to lean on when you have a freshman lawmaker. You know, you turn to places like K Street and your staffers, people who don't have term limits and have been there for a while. And so they essentially say that the power is going to be shifted from actual lawmakers to other outside sources. The other argument, and you hear this a lot from Democrats especially, but they say some of the, you know, minority members who have really had to fight their way to climb through the leadership ranks and get to where they are, it would be unfair to force them out. And those are the two big arguments against term limits. But I think there's just a general sense of reluctance to change how things operate in Washington. People don't like change. This is the system that they're used to, and people are very, very, very cautious about changing something as dramatic and institutional as, something like how long a congressperson can serve.
Let's bring in a call now. Jimmy is joining us from Valley Junction. Hi, Jimmy.
Morning. Morning. I don't have anything against term limits per se, but I would make them a little longer, like 3 terms. For a senator, which would be 24 years, and 10 terms for a congressman, which is 20, because Congress is under the same retirement system as federal employees, and they can't really get an immediate annuity until 20 years and 50 years old, or 25 years in any age. And so it would have term limits, but it wouldn't hurt them as much as it would if you limited it to under 20 years. Plus, they could go through the seniority system and get to those chairmanships faster, because the top folks are required to leave after 24 years and 20 years respectively. And so I like the idea, but I think they should make sure that people that aren't wealthy are going to run too. And so if you don't see any retirement at the end of your career, any chance to get it, you're probably not going to run, and I think that would just have bad enough now. It's bad enough now, the wealthy people.
Jimmy, Jimmy brings up a number of points there to discuss, Melanie. First of all, getting to chairmanships faster through the trajectory in term limits, but also the retirement pay and when that would be applicable. Go ahead.
That's actually a really good point, and I think that's a lot of what this debate also centers around. I just also would point out that the bill that has been introduced would actually be 12 years in the Senate and 12 years in the House, so it would be the exact same. Obviously, in the Senate, that's only 2 terms. 12 years in the House is 6 terms. But look, I think that there is a valid argument to be made that, a 24-year term limit, that's a very long time. You can definitely get a lot accomplished on the Hill in those years. You would have a chance to become a chairman. On the House side in the GOP, they also do have term limits just internally with their own chairmen. So you can only be a chairman for 6 years. Once that's done, you have to step aside. And that's another thing that they have done to try to help people move through the ranks and create a little bit more turnover so people just don't stay in the chairmanships. You see that with Democrats, and they get very, very frustrated with their leadership. There isn't a whole lot of turnover. But these are definitely some ideas that, Congress is discussing and has been thinking about.
So, Melanie, this group of lawmakers seeking the change said its goal is to put something together that combines all of their insights and present it to the White House in the coming weeks. What are you watching for here as this evolves?
Well, so step one, they just introduced their bill. They had initially gone to the White House last month. The president was very supportive in this Oval Office meeting. He said, look, if you guys can rally behind something, put it together, bring it back to me, we'll go from there. My understanding is that they do plan to pitch this back to the White House. It might not be an Oval Office meeting, but, you know, they've been talking to staff and administration folks. And then step two, they're going to try to get as many co-sponsors as possible. I'm going to be looking at the list to see who signs on. Obviously, we know Paul Ryan himself has been supportive of this idea in general, but would he be willing to actually back legislation like this? You know, what other high-profile people are going to be signing on? Those are the sorts of things that are going to be important. Are there going to be chairmen, you know, who are responsible for bringing up these bills in committee? That's the first stage in the legislative process. Are they going to be supportive? So this all really hinges on who in Congress is going to be supporting this effort and whether they decide to actually give it a chance to be brought up on the House floor.
Melanie, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Melanie Zanona is a congressional reporter for The Hill. And where do you come down on term limits? 800-642-1234. What about term limits on the state or even the city level? Call in or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up the conversation after a news update here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about term limits here on The Morning Show. I'm Kedar Chirkent. Last week, a group of bipartisan lawmakers on the Hill proposed a bill that would institute term limits for members of Congress. Last Thursday, Representative Mike Gallagher of Wisconsin did this Facebook Live post on the steps of the Capitol alongside his Democratic colleague, Representative Ro Khanna of California. And it's Gallagher who we hear first.
He's a Democrat, by the way. I know, if you can believe
progressive
it.
Progressive Democrat.
I'm a very progressive Democrat. And we wrote it, but we agree on congressional reform and term limits, and we wrote an op-ed on it a year ago. I got a great response in my district.
I did, too. And, you know, I mean, people care about term limits, about getting money out of politics, about not having gerrymandering. These aren't partisan issues.
Well, let's bring in Charlie Jacobs now. He's an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere. His areas of expertise include American politics and judicial process. Charlie, welcome back.
Thank you, Kate.
Well, let's start with Representative Mike Gallagher and his call for congressional term limits, which appears to have the support, the backing of President Trump. What do you make of all this?
You know, this is kind of what's old is new again. This is something that we've seen before. I think most prominently 1994, when the Republican Revolution took place and the Republicans took control of the national legislature. And it was part of Newt Gingrich's contract with America. In fact, it was point number 10. So there was pledges made by members of Congress that they would limit the number of terms, 2 in the Senate, 6 in the House. Some individuals, even when they were elected on that pledge, wrote a resignation letter and postdated it so that they, even if they got reelected, they would resign from the House. So this is something that has been percolating for years. A number of states have tried this. Some have abandoned it, and some state courts have overturned the legislation. So this is just something that periodically hits radar screens when it seems that the public is frustrated with inaction by legislatures. They want to see some change, and they think this is the way to accomplish that change.
Yeah, hashtag drain the swamp. We heard that on the campaign trail from President Trump. So this idea of congressional term limits seems to come up, as you mentioned, now and again, especially when there is frustration brewing. Do you think this proposal, as it's laid out, will succeed where others have failed?
I doubt it. I doubt you're going to get the threshold number of individuals necessary to propose this as a constitutional amendment, which is the likely path you have to take. And that's a result of a 1990s case from the United States Supreme Court called U.S. Term Limits versus Thornton, where they overturned some state limitations on congressional terms. And the pretty clear indication from that case was you're going to need to change the qualifications as written in Article 1 of the Constitution through an amendment. And that's a high bar. I mean, that's two-thirds of both chambers, the House and the Senate, and then three-quarters of the states. Now, it may achieve what it wants to in the states, because about three-quarters of the public, when polled, and this isn't something that's polled frequently, but about three-quarters of the public say they approve of the idea of term limits. So if it gets to that point, possibly, But I don't think you're going to get the requisite number of votes in the House or the Senate because they're guarding their own livelihoods. And so you don't usually get enough individuals to vote for the change.
So guarding their own livelihoods, historically, this has been an idea that's been popular with the public, but not so popular with lawmakers. Why is that so?
Well, it's sort of from an economic point of view, there are lots of sunk costs for individuals to get elected to any legislative seat, whether it's U.S. Congress or whether or not it's the State House. And so, you know, from the outside, it sounds like a great idea. We upend the status quo, we get some new voices in there, and then I'll just casually step aside. But, I mean, like any monetary investment, you've put a lot into this, and when individuals finally earn the seat that they want, they usually want to hold on to it because of the time, the effort, the money they've expended, and they believe that they have some sort of output that will benefit the public. And so they don't want to see that altered. I mean, you can see that in 2006, when most of the individuals who signed the pledge that Newt Gingrich pushed, I mean, there were still 25 members of Congress who had signed the pledge, and none of them stepped aside. Same thing in the U.S. Senate. Five individuals had signed the pledge who were still in the Senate, and they didn't step aside, including Olympia Snowe, who's still there. So these individuals usually come up with some excuse. I mean, Scott Walker has done it on several occasions to obliterate their pledge to not step aside and give somebody else a chance.
So there's this whole economics equation, as in return on investment. You get to this place, you get the job, you want to hold on to the job and see a return on it.
Correct. I mean, that's what individuals want to see. And I mean, there are other sort of layered issues here, is that there isn't that much competition for these seats. I mean, I think individuals believe that there is some sort of dam that is keeping people from running for office or keeping people from attaining these. And there are some institutional and structural factors that limit the ability of new candidates to rise. But we'll take the state of Wisconsin as an example. More than 40% of the state house seats are unopposed. So if we term limit these people out, who's going to take their place if there doesn't seem to be, at the moment, a groundswell of support for individuals to run against the entrenched incumbents?
Well, let's bring in a call here. Let's go to Nathan in Milwaukee. Hi, Nathan.
Hi. Thank you very much. I was actually going to mention that I was neutral on term limits, but there are some things that I don't think it will fix at all, brought up. I was also going to point out Ron Johnson was one of those who promised to only serve one term. But getting back to the point, term limits does not fix the campaign money or money in politics. It also doesn't fix ideologues, and there are some great examples out there. The Freedom Caucus, some of which are actually pretty old, are basically a bunch of ideologues that make it hard to get things done, but they were elected relatively recently to the U.S. House, so this wouldn't affect them at all. On the flip side, I mean, you have people like Mitch McConnell, who could be an argument for term limits, but you also have John McCain, who is highly respected and would really, as a person, not that he opposes them, but as an example, is a reason not to have term limits. So I worry about people coming pre-bribed, pre-programmed, but term limits not only not fixing it, but for some people potentially being used as a distraction from those other issues because they know voters get frustrated, but they'll say, look, we did this other thing, so don't worry about the money.
Nathan, thanks so much for the call. Charlie Jacobs, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this seems like such an elegant and simple fix that it will in some way eradicate some significant problems, both at the national and the state level and even the local level. But the difficulty is that we often don't have enough individuals to take their place, and those with the necessary knowledge of how the system works to do an effective job. So while there may be some frustration with a long-serving member of, say, the U.S. Senate, you have to remember that we're relying on their institutional knowledge and memory to keep the institution functioning the way it should. And again, there are going to be significant as well as petty frustrations with the way these long-tenured individuals operate. But they make the trains run on time in a lot of circumstances where some of the newer members don't really have that capacity.
We're talking right now with Charlie Jacobs. He's an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere, looking at the past, the present, the future of term limits in Congress, the landscape here in Wisconsin. You can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this latest push for congressional term limits? Is this something you'd like to see implemented, or is there value having long-serving members of Congress? 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Charlie, moving away from Congress for a moment, Green Bay Mayor Jim Schmidt recently made news when he called for term limits for city officials. More specifically, he said the mayor and the city council should not be able to serve more than 12 consecutive years. You're from the Green Bay area. What do you make of that proposal?
I think it sort of fits in with the same milieu that we're talking about here. There's a certain sense among elected officials that there's a frustration. I mean, we've had a number of very long-serving people, both on the Brown County Board and on the Green Bay City Council, and some of that has created some issues of ethical violations, legal violations. And so I think that there's a sense that there's corruption when people stay too long. And so this is a method by which we can alleviate some of that corruption. Now, of course, it's interesting that the mayor makes this as he's resigning and leaving office and not running for reelection. I mean, it's easy to make these kinds of proposals and impose them upon the person who is coming in the door after you than proposing those when you are actually in office and willing to leave that position of power. So it's an interesting dynamic that's occurring. But again, it's the same problem that you'll see at the national level and at the state level. How do you find people to run for these positions? We've seen, you know, sort of heightened partisanship and polarization lately. We've seen significant gerrymandering, which makes it difficult to beat entrenched incumbents. And when you run for office, you've got lots of money in the political process pouring in, and you wind up, when you're running against an incumbent, being just some sort of pinata that you get beat up in the whole process. And so a lot of people want to sit on the sidelines because that's too big of a cost that they want to bear.
Let's go to Richard now, joining us from Edgar. Hi, Richard. Oh, are you there?
Yep, I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with your guess. Changing this through the Constitution is simply, it may be popular for people to promote it, but it's simply not going to happen that way. We have a system that I think would change out people more frequently if we got rid of gerrymandered districts. And as one of your previous callers pointed out, the money, that's what keeps these people in for these long periods of time. I mean, you do need some continuity. You can't be changing out the head of the Finance Committee with a freshman legislator every 2 years. Some of these jobs are complicated. And even if you're going to implement some kind of term limits and start changing names and faces every couple of years, as long as that money's there, you're still going to have the same policies. And you may have a different name, a different face, but it's not going to improve the system.
Well, piggybacking off of what Richard said here, Tom on Facebook is saying campaign finance and lobby reform is very important to fixing dirty politics. Right now, both major parties have channels to push and pull money, and what they do or don't do is all about getting paid on a personal and party level. So, Charlie Jacobs, would term limits fix anything?
They may fix some elements. I mean, I think that you may see individuals who, at least in their initial foray into politics, won't be as beholden to lobbyists and big money politics because they will really be citizen legislators and they'll be sort of out of the loop. They won't know the profession well enough to know where to go and solicit those dollars. But then there's a problem associated with that, which is that you shift power towards the lobbyists and those with money because they understand how the system works and how to game it, either through the bureaucracy in the executive branch or just through the process of aiding new members of Congress or new members of a state legislature of writing the kinds of policies that they want. So most political scientists see the process of term limits creating opportunities for executives, governors, and the president, as well as lobbyists, to gain more power at the expense of the legislators and hence their constituents and the public.
Well, Andreas on Facebook says no one over 40 should hold elected office. Let's go to Karen now, joining us from Madison. Hi, Karen.
Hi. This is a really interesting topic. My perspective is that I lived in Michigan where we enacted term limits, and it did indeed turn more power to lobbyists. But I've seen some statistical information that term limits adversely affect the ability of women who have fought hard to be elected to continue to stay in office, because it kicks out the newly elected but allows the legacy people, which are predominantly male, to continue in power. Could your speaker comment about that?
Thanks, Karen. Charlie Jacobs, go ahead.
Yeah, that's a double-edged sword, because one of the positives about term limits is that you create opportunities for women and racial and ethnic minorities to have an opportunity. Because if you get these individuals who have been in office for years and have the connections to raise the money and serve the interests of their incumbency, if you get rid of them, then you have this opportunity for a new host of individuals who are more diverse to come in. But as you note, there's a back end or back door to that process, which means these individuals who did get recruited to run get flushed out of the system. And in a state like Michigan, it's particularly problematic because it's one of those states where it doesn't allow individuals, say, to serve the maximum number of years in the state legislature or the House and then move to the Senate. It caps the absolute number of years you can serve in office. And so, again, for women, that means that you put in a career, you start to build your bona fides as a member of an elected office, and then you're gone and done basically for the remainder of your career. So it can have real negative effects, even though there's the positive of recruiting these individuals to serve a diverse population.
Well, let's bring in Madeline now in De Pere. Hi, Madeline.
Hello. I live in Mike Gallagher's district, and I wish he would not waste his time on that kind of a political charade. I wish he would go after corruption. I have taken documentation of corruption to Mike Gallagher's local office, and I have received no response. I wish he would be spending time on that.
So Madeline is concerned that Representative Gallagher has his focus in the wrong place, Charlie Jacobs.
And it's interesting because, you know, the phrase we typically use in political science is that members of Congress, they're so concerned about getting reelected that they take all of their focus and they aim it at constituents. So individuals like Madeline typically get very quick responses about their concerns because they're the voters who are likely to go and cast a ballot for the incumbent member of Congress. So that's one of the complaints, is that pork barrel projects and the injection of federal funds in sort of an incoherent way into districts to support reelection of candidates, that's why you have to have term limits, because in essence it's a member of Congress bribing members of their districts and their constituency to reelect them. And if you put in term limits, then they won't have to focus on just pleasing individual voters but doing what is right. And I think that's what Madeline is arguing for. It's like, let's clean up the system and make it serve the people in a meaningful way rather than in this way that's only there to serve the interests of the incumbent to get reelected.
Well, Charlie, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Charlie Jacobs is an associate professor of political science at St. Norbert College in De Pere, talking about the past, the present, and future of term limits in Congress and what it's like here on the ground in Wisconsin. You can join in the term limits conversation at 800-642-1234. When we come back, we'll talk with a researcher from the University of Missouri who's done in-depth analysis on term limits, concluding that they don't replace career politicians with citizen lawmakers. That analysis is just ahead after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Late last month, President Trump gave his full backing for term limits, adding hashtag drain the swamp. We're talking about whether term limits actually achieved their intended purpose here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's bring in Jordan Butcher to the conversation. She's a doctoral candidate at the University of Missouri who is studying term limits. She is co-author of a recent Washington Post piece where we found her. It's called No, Term Limits Won't Drain the Swamp. We did the research. Jordan, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So why won't term limits, quote unquote, drain the swamp, as the headline of your piece suggests?
Well, based on my examination of 12 out of the 15 term limited states and looking at career patterns within those states, if term limits at the federal level in Congress are anything like what we see at the states, it doesn't appear that we're going to drain the swamp. It looks like people actually find a way to stay in the legislature because that's where they want to be. So they will navigate their way around term limits and find loopholes just so they can stay in the legislature, whether that means they're going to move from the lower to the upper chamber, from the upper to the lower chamber. And if term limits are anything like this in Congress, we're going to see the same patterns.
So they find loopholes, you're saying, like moving to a different chamber. What are some of these other workarounds that you found around term limits?
So in a lot of term limited states, the most common type of limit is what is called a consecutive ban. What this means is after a member has reached their set number of years, say 8 years in the lower chamber, the House of Representatives, then they are allowed to return after waiting an election cycle. So this could be 2 to 4 years. They're allowed to run for that same seat again. And we find that people actually do that. They will leave after they're termed out. And in many term-limited states, when they are allowed to return, they'll come back to the same seat. Or during their wait time of one election cycle, they'll actually move to the other chamber. And then after they've waited, they'll go right back to their original seat, staying in the legislature the entire time.
So you've been doing a lot of the research on this, on the topic of term limits. Can you tell us a bit more about how you got started doing this work and how you go about researching this?
I got started on this. A professor suggested to me, hey, maybe you should look at what term limits do. And I was not expecting to love what I found. And I ended up collecting data from 17 states. And I just got really into it and the dynamics of term limits and that they are so different. There's a lot of variation across the states themselves. And then when you add in this extra component of term limits, there's so much variation and there's so much to learn about it. And this comparative dynamic of what works and what doesn't is something that I enjoy to studying. And so in gathering all this data, learning more about political careers, and I learned that term limits are probably going to change things a little bit. And it's something that's understudied, especially recently. And then it just so happens that President Trump brought my work back into relevance. It was perfect timing for me.
So is there a sweet spot for term limits? Have you seen patterns in the states you've studied where it can be very beneficial to how government is running, how it's cooking?
Well, that is an interesting question. Based on my research and what other people have written, I'm not sure we have found a sweet spot yet. And it all really depends on what the voters or the government is looking for when they implement term limits. And that's what makes it a little difficult. If voters are wanting people to be kicked out of the legislature and not able to return, then their sweet spot is going to be a very strict term limit lifetime ban where individuals are not allowed to return. And that is in states like my home state of Missouri. But if voters don't want that and they want more experience in the legislature, then you're going to want some of these consecutive bans where people are actually allowed back. So a sweet spot is really going to depend on what the voters want. But there are so many types of term limits. Everything's up in the air. But the most common type is 8 years in the lower and 8 years in the upper. And for state legislatures and voters, that seems to be the sweet spot, whether or not it really works.
Let's go to Sarah in Lodi. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Well, I believe we already have term limits. It's called voting. And I think the bigger issue that we don't discuss is we complain about our government. Only about average 50% of people eligible to vote in our country. And rather than trying to restrict voting more, I really think we have a problem that we need to resolve and somehow make it easier to vote so that a larger group of people vote in the country, no matter who they're voting for.
Sarah,
and then we,
Go ahead. Yeah, it's really kind of difficult. You got a lot of background noise there. So what you're saying is we have to go to the polls. If more people voted, we wouldn't be having this conversation about term limits.
Correct.
Let's put that to Jordan. What do you make of that?
I think that's a very interesting point. I wondered the same thing myself when I first got into this. Why can't we just vote people out of office? And what people found when we first started looking to implement term limits across the states was that the incumbency advantage, those people already in office getting reelected, was so strong, and they didn't have enough people running against them. So one of the arguments for term limits was that it would increase competitive elections, and people would actually have to fight to stay in office and follow their constituents. However, since term limits have been implemented, other scholars have found this isn't really the case. So yes, people do complain about government, and yes, not many people vote. However, that's part of why people went for term limits, is because people weren't voting enough. But I think Sarah makes a very interesting point there.
So when you are looking at term limits and the restrictions, legislative careers typically take some different forms that you've seen. And let's talk about this one. I mean, you have talked about moving among the chambers, but human ambition, that lawmakers are more ambitious about running for higher office, that they are seeking a higher office. Is there something to that?
Well, other scholars have before me have found that this tends to be the case when they were looking at individual states. So my work focuses comparatively. So I wanted to see, does this exist across all states with term limits? And I found it really does. People retire less and they want to stay in office for as long as they can. There is something about term limits and the finite time that they are allowed in the legislature that gives them this desire to keep looking forward because they know there is a certain end in mind. I without talking to legislators, I'm not really sure why this change occurred. But we can see empirically that they do stay in office longer than they did before term limits.
Let's bring in Clyde now, joining us from Cedarburg. Hi, Clyde. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you for this program. The problem, the issue of term limits is actually a distraction from the real problems that are facing us in America regarding a government that is not by and for the people. And it's also, if it's implemented, if term limits were implemented, it would also have, balance, a very negative, adverse effect on us.
What would that be, Clyde, in a nutshell?
The adverse effect is that we would have apprentices constantly representing us, they would be arrayed against the massive forces of lobbyists who are professionals, and also the politicians would not have the opportunity of having a career representing the people, and it would render legislative office merely a stepping stone to getting a well-paid, very highly paid corporate position. So the ambition will be strictly towards getting a good lobbyist position after you've finished your term.
So Clyde's saying here that the newbies versus lobbyists, that delicate balance would be upended. Jordan?
There is a lot to unpack there. So I want to start with the idea of being an apprentice and the apprenticeships that we see in government. So under term limits, we find that apprenticeships are actually shorter and members move to leadership faster. Now, whether or not that's good, I will leave that to Clyde to decide, but apprenticeships are actually shorter and it's not a permanent thing under term limits. However, for this stepping stone to a career outside of politics, other scholars who study Congress have found that this is more of a partisan divide, that this is more in nature of Republican politicians than Democrats. And so there, it's not necessarily a term limit problem. That's something that we already observe in Congress, that Republicans tend to retire to other positions more frequently than Democrats do.
So is there an alternative, so to speak, to term limits that may do a better job of, quote, draining the swamp?
If that is what people want, to drain the swamp, I think term limits, if done correctly, could do that. They would have to be very strict limits. However, with term limits, we are losing a lot of expertise and knowledge that is necessary for the functioning of the institution. So if we put term limits in place, even these very strict limits, there are other things and other dynamics of government that would have to change in order for it to function normally.
So, Jordan, what other research do you plan to do on this topic?
So I am finishing up some work on careers right now, and then I am getting ready to move into studying how term limits affect the overall institution. I'm going to look at leadership structures. I'm going to look at committee structures and the ability of committees to get work done. And then finally, I'm going to assess the relationship between executive and legislative branches across the states to see how term limits affect that dynamic.
Do you think term limits have more of an impact than we might give them credit for on first blush?
I do. I think the effects of term limits go much further than we could have ever anticipated. Some of the things that we predicted with term limits didn't come to fruition. However, there are a lot of indirect effects of term limits that affect, like I said, leadership structures, committees, knowledge, expertise, policy making. There are many indirect effects that we didn't really think about when we were first implementing term limits in the 90s.
Well, Jordan, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Jordan Butcher is a PhD candidate at the University of Missouri who is studying term limits. Earlier, we talked with political science professor Charlie Jacobs from St. Norbert College, and we started this term limits discussion with congressional reporter Melanie Zanona with The Hill. This hour of the morning show was produced by Chris Molina and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Derringer provided technical support. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this conversation on term limits is on the Ideas Network.